praying, because sometimes, you know, there's passages in the Bible that I don't want to preach. Is it okay to confess that as a pastor? I always tell everybody I love every book that I'm doing, and that's true. I love James. We're in James. And if you want to turn there, we're going to be in James chapter 4 today. But the reality is that sometimes you hit something, and I'm looking for a pinch hitter. I asked a bunch of people this week. Because sometimes I don't myself want to speak the things that I think God even has for us. They're hard. This is one of those times. Because we're going to look once more at the mirror of the law. James has been so amazing doing that with us. And honestly, sometimes the idea is to get to the gospel, you got to understand who you are. And to receive the depth of Christ's love for you that we can't even really understand. And so James does that I think of it a little bit like when I was a boarding student in Hawaii for a year. And it was kind of a lonely year. And sometimes I would go out away from the little campus there on a hill and go down where it was really dark. And when I did that and I could look up away from the lights, oh, you guys, the stars. Amazing. They just exploded with light across. But you see, when I was back around the lights, I didn't really see them so well. And so I feel like what James is doing for us is he's kind of taking a little stick and he's beating out the lights to make it dark so we see the sky. He's making a lot of time. He's done this in his epistle to us that the lights are out. So you see the amazing gift. But you know what? It's a struggle. Because I like my lights. To extinguish hope in myself, I don't believe that I'm stone cold dead. That my fruit, that my life, that everything is simply by abiding, by remaining in the trust that Jesus paid it all and it worked. And I have life, but it's in Him. So, I have to be, the term sometimes used is repented again, turned again, continue to say, oh, look, come back. Look at what's been done for you. Look at where your life actually is. And James, he's doing that for us. He's sort of taking our very best things, our accepted practices, even as Christians, and telling us, nope. I mean, that's kind of been his MO. Right? You don't murder? Of course not. You attend church? Of course, yeah, you know. But you know what? You're not impartial. You like some people over others. That's sin. Your tongue isn't perfect. Never has been, never will be. That's sin. These things ought not be, he said. You have desires that aren't God's for you. You have them and that causes conflict among you. Yeah. You're never okay except in the wonder that Jesus Christ forgives you, forgives me, frees me in you. Life is trusting that He has us forever. So this is super strong today, not in His rejection of my bad things, but in His questioning. More than questioning, condemning my good things, my acceptable practices. So it's okay to get mad, but just don't get mad at me. Because what you're getting mad at is the Bible. Is God speaking to us to push us back to where our hope really is this morning. And there He is. God will not accept your sacrifice. He has already accepted Christ. In Him is your acceptable sacrifice. Okay, so I said derailed because it's kind of like we're on a train, most of us. We're on a train and we're going down the tracks and we're headed to glory, man. It's so cool. But you know what? That goal that we have is actually not what God wants of us. And so He derails us in order that in our weakness He gives us salvation. Derailed. That's what we are. And it starts today with planning. planning. You know, life well lived does require planning, right? Implementation, action in steps. It helps with worry. We talked about worry. We read about worry. You realize if I know what's ahead, if I can plan it, my worry goes down. Doesn't it that work for you? Man, if I look at my calendar, I kind of know what's going on. I don't have uncertainty. I start to think, oh, it's good. I make a budget to plan what I'm going to do with my money. I plan for the future with retirement accounts and sort of planned saving. And not just money. I think about school and my kids, and they're on a plan, and they go by grade, and they learn things, and they don't learn everything all at once. It's planned. Let's go here to second grade. I mean, I do worry some, and with planning, well, I mean, it is true that even with planning as a Christian, I still worry. Is there going to be enough? So it doesn't necessarily work, but I always have a little bit need for more, and my planning helps highlight that. But even so, I stave off insecurity with planning. And so here's James. And James comes along to us, and he says this. He says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. Okay, stop there for a minute. This first area, it's planning. Vision. Normal living, right? Making an appointment next week or next month or, you know, in these days, next year to see a doctor. I'm going to purchase concert tickets for King and Country in the summer because I'm going to plan to go. I'm going to make a long-term investment in education to be an engineer. We plan because that's how we get things done. Does anybody not like that? I mean, anybody who has any gumption. Normal living. I call it wisdom. Don't you? Talk about someone who has zero plans. I'm just going to sit and hope that something happens. You bum, get off your duff and plan out where you should do. James says, who are you? You have no idea if you're going to get to do anything. In fact, your whole life, he says, it's just a vapor, right? It's the same verse. Let me put it. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. Do you think you're not dependent on God for every breath you take? You say, well, of course we have. Okay, how many times have you been dependent on God for a breath this morning? Oh, how many times have you even breathed? I don't know. I don't think about it. Yeah, okay, think about it for a second. Take a deep breath with me. Go ahead. The Lord enabled that. He gave you breath. But I did the 10,000 other breaths that I've taken this morning, and I did not think, oh, the Lord enabled that. I just did it. James is going after something like that, right? You think you're not dependent on God. What makes you think you do anything on your own? Don't you realize your life is a mist? That means like insubstantial and transient. It's about the truth that we don't really believe that we're dependent. We forget about in 3 seconds that it's all Jesus and none of me. We make plans supposing our strength and ability all the time. What are you doing this afternoon, Dax? Well, I'm going to mow the lawn. You know that's made up because it's raining. Not mowing the lawn in the rain. I make a plan that's dependent on me and I feel like, well, how are you doing? Well, I'm feeling pretty good. My back's pretty good. I'm going to do it. It's all about me. Hey, can you help me move? Sure. What day? I might think about, well, you know, my knee's kind of hurting. Okay. You know what I don't say? Well, I might show up if the Lord wills. Right? You want to build a house? You get an architect. You make plans. You do permitting. You make a foundation. You take steps. Duh. You don't say, well, if the Lord wills. So James, well, I mean, true enough, you know, my life could end any moment. Anyone who's had a brush with death, you realize it, right? Oh, whoa, something almost happened to me. And that lasts for about 20 minutes to 2 days. I almost died of a heart attack in 2020. There was like maybe longer than 2 days. Maybe it was more like a month or two where I was just like every breath popped with life. Lord, thank you that I'm alive. The past year or so, oh yeah, I had a heart attack in 2020. I don't think about it. Still walking around. That's what he's talking about, right? This idea, the mountain of planning that I do for tomorrow. But if you want to make a nod to the sovereignty of God, then you go, well, okay, I get what James is saying. We'll make a little nod. We'll add on some language. If God wills. Let's continue with preaching this morning, if the Lord wills. Excuse me, I've got to go to the bathroom. If the Lord wills. You want to go out to lunch today after church? Well, if the Lord wills. How annoying. Like, it's not about being an annoying person. That's not what he's trying to do. It's not about the line. It's about what the law reveals. That's what this is about. Your lack of understanding that God provides for you every single moment. Anything but daily dependence rots. That's manna in the wilderness. Remember how they'd go out every day and they would collect the manna and they would eat it? But if you saved up some for tomorrow, welcome to the worms. It's God who provides oxygen for me, provides food for me, provides clothing for me, and I forget, I don't really believe it, so my very life is arrogant and evil, boasting of my own strength because I plan, and I don't in my heart think always, you know, only if God allows it. I won't deny that's true, but I don't think about it. And that's why he says, as it is, you boast in your own arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Boasting of control when you have none. You get the point, right? There is a thankfulness for this moment that ought to pervade us, and it just doesn't happen. I'm planning, assuming my own strength all the time. James is not asking for you to insert a new phrase in your vocabulary, right? He's making us take a look in the mirror and realize that even after we've been told this, even after I'd sit here and rub your nose in it, give me an hour or a day or a month or a year, and you and I will not have changed. I will continue to plan. I will continue to try and control, to take steps towards what I want, assuming that tomorrow will be like today. Oh, Dax, come on. You're being a little strong. Are you saying I can't plan? No. I'm saying you do plan. It's not about whether you can or can't. It's the reality of you do. In presumption of what God will do based on your own desires. It is boasting, says James. Hey, you know, with my skills and good effort, I can make some money. Oh, can you? Oof. We are not talking about how to live a good life by not presuming on God. We are speaking in James about your definition of good life being arrogant and boasting and evil. No way out. And it humbles us. I cannot not plan. There's no hope in this because I do it. And I say, whoa. I get it. I feel the need to acknowledge God more in my daily living. That's not really James is saying, but I do feel that. I accept that. And some people want to take this passage as that weak. Like, I'm just reminding you. And he says words like evil about my behavior. There's got to be hope somewhere, but that's not it. Say, yeah, but tax. Whoa. I do a lot of good. Even my planning, you know, results in really good things. Okay, let's talk about that. I'm calling it empathy. You'll see why in a second. Because look what he keeps on going. He says, verse 17, so whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin. You know the right thing to do and you don't do it, that's sin. Not just staying away from the bad thing. Doing the right thing. It's not a hard concept to grasp. You can go back to the Old Testament for examples. For example, Israel in the wilderness, you remember them, right? When they first came out of Egypt and God delivered them and he's taken them to the mountain. He hasn't given them the law and they grumble and complain. And God just says, hey, I get it. Here, have some food. Here's the manna. Here's some water. Strike the rock. But then he gives them the rules so they know that they shouldn't grumble. And then they grumble again. Remember what happens then? Plague, death, judgment. Because they knew. To whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, that's sin. It's not ignorance. Once you know, you know. And it is sin not to respond to that. Why is this helpful? Because it points out the same thing as the last thing he's talking about. You're in a cesspool of your own sin. If you look at you, I don't like that. Well, I don't either. You're faced every day with what is right. And every day you fail to do it completely. Right? I come home and I'm tired. I sit on the couch. I know my kid would love to play a game with me or do something with me, but I just want a few minutes for me just to be quiet. Is that sin? Come on, I'm tired. I know the right thing to do. I don't do it. To him it is sin. You know, there's people, I know this. I'm telling you now, I'm sorry if you didn't know this, because now you know. There are people in Africa dying of starvation. What are you doing about it? Nothing. It's not my thing. Is that right? We're going to send some Christmas presents. Is that enough? I'm not saying it's not good. It is good. It's amazing. It's cool. It's awesome. But honestly, James is talking about let's keep going to your evaluation of you, and the things that you do are not enough. You just having empathy is not enough. It just lets you know something's wrong. Yeah, something's wrong. I'm going to feel bad for you. It's not enough, says James. Well, then I'll do more. It's still not enough. There are people right now in our community living under a bridge. You say, well, our tax dollars help. That's enough? You loving them? Well, okay, that's good, Dad. I'll take them a sandwich. Is that enough? How come you're not bringing them home in a car to your house and giving them a room? Well, because it's just not reasonable in my circumstances, huh? To him who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it. That's the weight of this. I get it. I'm so with you. Let me show you by my excellent behavior how awesome I am and be like me because I'm like Jesus. No! No, I'm talking about you and I looking in the mirror, knowing that the Bible says, love your neighbor as yourself. And I make a couple steps towards loving my neighbor a little. I know the right thing to do, which is what? Self-sacrificial love. Do I do it? No. I do not love everyone in the world like I love my kids. I adore my kids. I kind of like other people. That's a partiality. I know the right thing, but I don't do it. That's sin. This is a maximal statement, not a minimal one. You know, there are people in our body right now who are shut-ins or nursing home, and they could use a visit. You love them? Wouldn't it be right to go spend time? How come you don't do it? That's sin. There's mold on my back porch. I know I should clean it off, but I'm, again, tired. It's going to be fine for another week, right? I mean, come on. I know it needs to be cleaned off. It gets slippery out there, but actually it degrades my concrete. And then before I clean it off, my kid does slip and fall. I knew it was right and I didn't do it. That's sin. I'm constantly judging what is enough. I have empathy for what is wrong. I don't fix it. If you know the right thing to do is to trust, take it this way. If you know the right thing to do is to trust God every moment, and then you don't, and instead you worry, isn't that sin? Him who knows the right thing to do, trust God, and doesn't do it, worries. For him it is sin. Yeah. I mean, we could just keep going. I call this area empathy because we have a huge case of dismissing sin by having feelings for doing right instead of doing right. This statement is not, we'll feel badly for the mistreated. This is about making things right. I'm not saying do more. I'm saying if you think empathy is enough, you're wrong. Nothing is enough but doing exactly what you should do. I love our cultural expressions of this. They've kind of sunk into our societies. I was listening to a couple the other day. You know, if you really think that you're standing on land stolen from some distant peoples, it's not enough to say it. Right? Doesn't that make sense? You need to give it back. Stop talking. If you really think you need to love your neighbor as yourself, you need to love them like you love yourself. Treat them like your beloved family, not help them a little. You know, Jesus tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. Remember that? It was about this incredible enemy to the people he was talking to, very offensive to them, but he's the example of amazing love because he's overwhelmingly helping the person who is his mortal enemy. The point was not, give it a try. The point was, you don't do that. Right? You say, well, I guess you're right, Pastor. And then, you know what? Honestly, that's a little depressing. Yeah, it could be guilt provoking. You could say, yeah, I'll try harder if you tell me and I'll do it. But you know what? You don't want to do it. You know, and by the way, don't put that on me. Like, oh, Pastor told me I need to love more, so I'm going to. No, if you had a heart to actually love, you wouldn't need me to tell you. You don't need me to tell you these things. You know. I am not your conscience. You are your own judgment. If you know, you know. I mean, because the other real possibility, because what we do is instead we get defensive and deny. Say, no, I am loving. I'm loving great. I'm doing much better than the guy next to me. And it's, that person over there is not loving very much like me. It is not a bell curve. It is not a comparison. It is not doing your part. We're not talking about that. We're talking about your sin and my sin. I know what the right thing to do and I don't do it. And when I'm in argument with my wife, I don't just simply ask for forgiveness. I stew on it for a while. The sin. When my hand sins, I don't cut it off. I've read the Sermon on the Mount. That's sin. It's not practical, Dax. I know. Pragmatics ruin us in the sin department because we are all so guilty. We're never not guilty in ourselves unless there's some other way, you know. Even as Christians, our best is not reflective of some magical new heart. I have it by faith. I'm there. I'm so there. But we got to talk about by faith. We'll talk about it. Don't worry. But in myself, in the mirror, as I look, because what's the problem with me saying I have a new heart? I keep planning. I keep knowing what to do and I don't do it. So if you're going to argue with me, I have a new heart. How come I don't? And don't you dare say, well, I'm taking baby steps and slowly getting there. Because that's not what he's saying. Maybe there's something else, because my plans and my presumption, it's arrogance. My knowing what's right and I'm not doing it, it is sin. And here's one more. I said securing, but it's actually, that's a word that I can kind of lift over versus what he actually says. Let's look. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. When is the last time we did? Okay, guys, time for a weep and howl. Let's praise the Lord together, right? We don't say let's weep and howl. You say, well, yeah, your riches have rotted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver have corroded. Their corrosion will be evidence against you, and you will eat your flesh like fire. You've laid up treasure in the last days. Come on, he says, you rich people. And I just want to say, he's not talking to those outside the church. And he's not pulling punches. Weep and howl for the miseries. Why? That's the point of that last line. This is the reason why. You've laid up treasure in the last days. It doesn't work to shift this off to someone else.
Well, Elon Musk. Yeah.
Do you have more than one pair of clothing? Do you have any savings? Do you have anything that you've set aside for tomorrow? These are the last days. What are you doing? That's James talking. It doesn't work to shift it. The issue is the amount of money you have, the amount of stuff you have, the idea that you have more than simply the clothes on your back and the meal you ate this morning if you ate one. You have food in the pantry where moths destroy? That's what he's talking about, right? He's not even talking about how we get tired of our clothing and throw it out or give it to Goodwill. It's just having the stuff. Do you have a garage? Are there things in it? Slowly rotting things. The problem revealed is you and me. We are saving in the last days. Why? Because I worry if I'm going to have enough. I think it's wisdom. I'm being wise. It's an identity problem. It's a value problem. If you have these things, you have to take care of them. I start to have security in the stuff. So, well, not me. Oh, yeah, really? Don't you feel less worried if you have a large bank balance saved away than if you have nothing and you're hoping that your paycheck will cover your rent? Of course I do. Does your father not know that you need these things? Well, yeah, but he gave me the ability to save. And so I'm saving. I'm being a good steward of my resources. That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. I get all that. I'm actually with you. I think that wisdom in the world says you should financially plan for the future. But I'll tell you what. James says here, when you don't even know what's happening tomorrow, all the stuff you've accumulated, it's going to rot. Would it be better for you just to give it all away? And all of a sudden, I'm back there standing as Jesus is talking to the rich young ruler guy. Remember him? He says, one thing you lack, kid, I love you. Give all your stuff away. Come on, follow me. Guy went away sad. I think many of us would too. I'm not saying Jesus is telling us to do that. I'm saying it reveals our heart. We are savers. We are squirrelers away. We feel better if God's blessed us with stuff because now I know that I have it instead of trusting a God who provides for me every single moment exactly as he wants to. I don't actually think that happens. I'm more trusting in my bank account being full. I'm more trusting in my 401. I'm going to say it's a 403. Obviously, I don't have one. Whatever they are. My Roth IRA. I know that one. Right? That's it. I'm not trying to be pokey. I'm just trying to read the actual text that the problem revealed is me saving in the last days. Me being more secure when I have cushions. It's just reality. And the person who gets revealed is me. Now, I don't think of myself as rich. But I'm richer than 95% of the world. Don't have to have much to be richer than 95% of the world. So I try to avoid it applying to me. But James is pointing to us. He is. And he even keeps on going. Look at this. He says, behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned. I actually feel good about that. Why? Because that's not me. I haven't defrauded anyone. My savings is by my hard-earned labor. It's in a savings account that makes interest that the bank gives me. Well, how'd the bank make that? Why is it giving you interest? Well, because they're using my money to loan out to other people. What people? I don't know. How about people that might be being taken advantage of with high interest rates? Have you heard of usury? Terrible sin in the Old Testament. Well, you just don't look, you know. I go shopping for the cheapest tennis shoes I can find. Man, I like those super cool Dunks. Made in China by people who make $3 a day. And I'm making sure I find the cheapest ones because I want to make sure. No. We're not immune from this, you guys. We just don't look at it. We don't look at the reality that we actually take advantage as best we can of it because our mindset is I'm going to be as wise as I can with my money. So with my money, I'm going to do all the things that maximize me. And that includes not looking hard at how things are made. Right? I mean, we try. We give little nods. This is certified whole farm coffee beans. And you're showing how stinking rich you are that you can buy them. Mourn and wail, rich people. I know this whole thing sounds more like feudal England, but it's not. I remember us talking to someone in Africa, they were doing cashew farming. They were telling me of all the middlemen and the cuts. So they make, you know, they do cashews so that they want to because it's the only way they make money. But they're making, you know, something like 20 cents a pound for something that you're going to pay $10 a pound for. And all along the way, people are taking advantage of them. Say, well, we'll just fix that. It's not about fixing. It's about the reality of this is me. He's talking to me. I like, my stuff clings to me. I mean, my defense is often that it's relative. I'm not as rich as that guy over there. There's lots of people who use their money much worse than me. But this is not relative, what he's talking about. It's a direct jab at anyone who saves. and I save. And we all try to save. I do not live hand to mouth if I can help it. Nobody does. My dear brother who lives outside, and I love him, he carries a big bag of stuff around so that he can have something for tomorrow. Do you make plans? Oh, you arrogant, evil person. You don't fully act on what you know is right, you sinner. You save. Oh, you should be weeping and howling because the misery is coming. You see, when I say these things, you're like, this is just too much. James, what are you doing? That's actually not what I'm looking for this morning. I'm not looking for guilt. It makes me feel guilty. I'm not looking for defensiveness. It makes me defensive. I'm looking for acceptance. Yeah, the Bible looks at you, all the little lights you think you have, and James is knocking them out. Should be getting pretty dark in your room as he takes your good things and he takes them apart. And even after I pray a prayer, even after I come to Christ, it still becomes, I do these things. What do I need to see? Oh, the depth of the incredible love of Christ for you. It's deeper than you can see. It's wider than you can know. It's higher than you can imagine. And the way that I get to see it is the room gets dark and I see the stars. And that's where I want to leave you today, this day, that there's freedom in this, because there's no freedom in being a theologian of glory. There's no freedom in the sermon that I just did for you. And then if I would end it with, now try harder. Don't be a planner. Don't have empathy without action. Don't save. No, we do those things. But our hope is in none of them. We're not evaluating any of them. We're saying, oh no, I got to get over here. Because we are theologians of the cross. We come to the cross of Jesus Christ, where the blood of Christ was shed for me, where he forgives all of my imperfections, where he promises me that he's going to use me for his good, that he will bear fruit through me, his fruit, that he's going to do all the things that I need. He will. That he says, I paid it all and it worked. And he says, you're part of this amazing story that I'm putting together with me at the center. I am the head, and you're doing the things that I want you to do in the midst of your continued in your flesh imperfections. I cannot but be what I desire to be. I cannot not be someone who plans. It is how I am made. And yet it gets me nowhere except as a hammer to say, oh no, I must have Christ. James knows that. He just also knows that we so often explain away our evil, explain away our sin, act like that's all okay, when our hope is not found in any of that stuff. Like Jesus said in Matthew 6 this morning, the testimony in the Bible over and over is, God takes care of you. Christ is all. Not don't plan, but my hope is not in my plans. Not don't do, but my hope is not in my doing. Not don't save, but my hope is not in my stuff. The bright light of the sky is Jesus paid it all, and it worked. We are loved and forgiven and embraced, and you are this morning. I don't care about any of that stuff if you'll just turn from it. Not to stop doing, you're doing, but to turn to my hope. Is that Jesus Christ is for me, and I will stay there forever. That's James. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for what you've done for us. Lord, this hitting at things that are dear to my heart. Lord, I confess I don't like it. We as a body, we come before you and say, Lord, please, thank you for the blood of Christ for us. Thank you that you really have paid it all and you've done it all, and help your Holy Spirit to remind us again of the depth of your care for us in the midst of us not being in ourselves righteous. We love you, Lord. Thank you that you are our holiness and our righteousness and our glory forever. In your precious name, amen.